You guys want to take a guess at what we're talking about today? You didn't know you were coming to science class, did you? You thought you were coming to church, but I tricked you. No, this is one of my favorite things about the sermon that we're going to talk about is there's a little bit of Bible and a little bit of science all mixed into one, which is my favorite. So if you're an intellectual or more of a feeler, I have something for you, so this will be good. I am one that loves the new year. I don't know what it is about the new year that just really excites me. I don't know if it's the nostalgia still from Christmas that just hasn't worn off yet, or if maybe it's just this idea of new. I'm one that always likes to change things. I like to take a new way into work, and I like to reorganize my furniture, much to my husband, I'm sure, soon dismay. I've done it to my roommates a couple of times. I love changing things, and I love doing new experiences. It's just something that I really, really enjoy. And I know not all of you are like me, probably. Some of you, though, I'm not really one to make New Year's resolutions. I am more one of those that falls into Jeremy's camp. I do like to improve one thing about myself throughout the year and, you know, kind of focus on that. But I don't really set New Year's resolutions, but I'm sure some of you probably do. Some of you probably already have all your New Year's resolutions for all your different areas of improving your life, and you probably have your five-step plan on how to carry it out. And then others here in the room, maybe the more realists of us, are thinking, why even set New Year's resolutions? Because let's be real, the last 3 years hasn't changed, so why even try? Right? Because after all, I still paid too much for Christmas this year, and credit cards are going to hit my account in mid-January, and I'm still in the dead-end job that I really don't enjoy, and there's no way to move forward, but I can't quit because I don't have another job, or I'm still in this relationship that, let's be honest, is dying rather than thriving. Or maybe because I'm still sitting in my apartment all alone, and I don't have a relationship. And so for many of us, it doesn't really matter which camp you fall into, whether you're the goal setters or the realists who say, why even try? I think maybe this sermon might be for you. Because what if life change didn't start with behavior? What if life change didn't start with changing our job or changing our friends? Not to say that those things aren't important, but what if for so often and so many of us, we skip a very vital step to life change? What if life change started with the mind? What if life change started with mastering our mindset and changing the way that we think? Science would call this changing our neurological pathways, but God would call it renewing or transforming our minds. Let me explain this just a little bit. As we saw on Brain Games, that's a Brain Games place on National Geographic. I've referenced them many times before my sermon. They're really, really interesting little games to help you learn how your brain works. And as we saw, every time you are faced with a decision, your brain will relate it to every other experience that you might have had, and it will try to relate it to a similar experience. Once it finds that, it releases a protein called myelin in your brain, and it tells your brain that, hey, this is the way we should go every single time. This is great if the habit is good. Like, for instance, I have a habit that I must hang up my keys as soon as I get into the house. Otherwise, I will have no idea where my keys are later in the day when I need to use them. I have the habit that if I want to keep set track of something, I pass it off to Brandon because he will actually know where it is at the end of the day. Maybe that's more of a coping mechanism. I don't know. But for some of us, these habits are really, really good, but then there's other times that these habits are really, really bad. And they set you on a course that could be detrimental in the future. Let's give an example. You get really angry. You're frustrated and you're mad. And so your first reaction is to go home to your spouse or your kids and yell at them, ah! And in your brain, it triggers that, okay, when I get angry, I yell. And the more we make that decision to when I get angry, I yell, the more it implants it in my brain that that is the way my life works. Let's go a little more serious. When I get frustrated or overwhelmed with work, I go to the bar, right? And over again, I can't cope until I have that drink in my hand. All of a sudden, this habit leads to something that could be very detrimental. What about this one? I'm worried. I'm upset. So I go to the refrigerator, and I grab the big bowl of mashed potatoes and gravy. And I'm not talking like make myself a little bowl later. I'm talking from personal experience, in case you're wondering. I'm going to take the whole bowl of mashed potatoes and gravy. I'm going to add just a little bit of cheddar cheese to it to make it really, really healthy for me. And then I'm going to proceed to eat. What does that do? That implants in my brain that when I am worried, what do I go to? I go to food. How about this one? I get really upset. I had a hard day at work. I'm a little bit stressed. So I'm going to go shopping and spend the money that I just made. Some of y'all experienced that during December. And then all of a sudden, credit card bills start racking up, and we realize that these habits that we form, these mindsets, these neuropathways that we trigger in our brain are leading us down a really detrimental path. Your life is always moving in the direction of your strongest thoughts. Did you guys hear me on that? Your life is always moving in the direction of your strongest thoughts. That could be the thoughts of the lady at the office that you're just really, really entertained by. It could be the thoughts of being frustrated, and so therefore we have these coping mechanisms and the thoughts about what you're going to do when you get off work to feel better. Your thoughts are always going in the direction, or your life is always going in the direction of your strongest thoughts. Science calls this habits. God calls these strongholds. And strongholds can be good things. They can be something that protect us and help us rely on them. Although, if they're bad strongholds, it can be a prison. And it can seem like, or it can bring on this this feeling of being overwhelmed and unable to change because we are bound by our strongholds or our habits. There's a guy named Paul that I reference a lot. Paul is a scholar who lived during Jesus' day, and he has such an interesting story because he starts off actually persecuting Christians, Jesus followers, and then he has this epic revelation with Jesus, and it changes his life forever. But let me ask you this. Can you imagine the habits Paul has ingrained in his brain from the times of persecuting Christians? Can you imagine what habits he has formed? The judgment calls he makes automatically without even meaning to, the reactions he has to certain Christians, or maybe the habit or breaking the habit of not accusing them all the time. If anyone knew what it was like to restructure or transform the way that they think, it would be Paul. He didn't always have it, though. In Romans chapter 7, one of his earlier writings, he says this, he goes, "For what I am doing, I don't understand, and what I want to do, that's not the thing that I do, and the thing that I don't want to do, that's the thing that I always keep on doing. Who is going to save me from this craziness?" But Paul soon, and what I hope we gather soon, is that maybe the key to change is not transforming all of our circumstances, although that is important. Maybe the start comes from transforming our mind. So in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5, Paul is writing to a church, a group, the Corinthians, and he says this. He says, "We are humans, but we don't wage war as humans do. We use God's mighty weapons, not worldly weapons, to knock down the strongholds," there's that word, "strongholds of human reasoning, and to destroy false arguments. We destroy every proud obstacle that keeps people from knowing God. We capture the rebellious thoughts and teach them to obey." You see, Paul describes this divine power. And don't get me wrong, this divine power is awesome if you're a Christ follower, right? This is awesome to be able to tap into. But if you're a doer like me, relying on God's divine power is awesome, but you also want to be able to do something, right? And this is what I love about Paul, is he gives you those things to do. He says, if you want to transform your mind, rely on the divine power of God first and foremost. However, you also need to capture every thought and decide if it is leading you in the direction that you want to go. Where's your thoughts leading you today? What direction are your thoughts pointing you to? And this is what is so interesting to me. This is not just a biblical thing. So for all of you who aren't Christ followers in the room, okay, this is actually a scientific thing that they talk about. This idea that your brain forms these habits, right? And as they form habits, you can actually break them by replacing them with something else. And we're going to get into that just a little bit more. But as we renew our mind, it takes intentionality. Because what happens is as we are looking, so, okay, I was doing a little bit of research for the sermon, and it wouldn't surprise you that a lot of motivational, like, videos came up as I was starting to do this, you know, because everyone wants to change. Everyone wants motivation to change. And what I found was interesting is there was this motivational website that I went to, and it wasn't Christian-based at all, okay? However, what they said in there is they said you need to visualize the life that you're looking for. And for us as Christians, I would say that new life that God gives us in Him. And they said that you have to visualize what it is and then recognize every single thought and decide, is this leading me to where I want to go? My friends, we do not get to change miraculously. Sometimes God works that way. Sometimes He takes care of any issue or any addiction or any problem right away, and you don't have to do anything. And that is awesome when He does. However, most of the time, He relies on us to come along with Him. So while this technique is simple, it is far from easy. Because what it requires us to do is to consciously and intentionally think about what we are thinking about. We have to think about the words that we are saying to each other and the words we are saying to ourselves. And we have to think about the thoughts that we are having and if it is leading us to this changed life that God has called us to live. These habits, like I said, is called rewiring your brain or restructuring your neural pathways, according to science. According to God, though, He calls it renewing your mind or transforming your mind or rethinking the way that you think. Paul, the guy I referenced earlier, he talks about this in Romans 12. And in Romans 12, 2, he says, don't copy the behaviors and customs of the world, but let God transform you into a new person. How does He do that, though? You guys see this? By changing the way that you think. Not changing who you're married to. Not changing your job, not changing who you're hanging out with, although those things may be important. No. The start comes from changing the way that you think. And then you will learn God's perfect and pleasing will for your life. What are you thinking about? How's your thought life? You see, because here's the thing. If you have trained yourself to think that when I feel bad, I eat, or when I'm upset, I go shopping, what happens is your bad habit is already formed, which makes it a lot harder to break it. You guys know this, right? It's harder to break a bad habit than it is to start a new one. And as we see in this brain games, guys, this is science, right? It makes sense because the pathway is already formed and you are fighting your natural tendencies. So how do we do this? Other than taking every thought captive and weighing it and deciding whether or not it's leading us to the path we need, how do we do this? Scientists say, replace the habit. Don't try to remove it altogether. Now, why would that work? Are you guys bored? You guys seem really bored right now. I'm just going to say, okay, I'll wrap up the science stuff really quickly here. The way this works is, just a little bit more science, okay? The way this works is that whenever you make a new decision, okay, it does release myelin into your brain, that protein, okay? But if you enjoy the decision you make, if you are happy because of the decision you make, or if you are proud of yourself for the decision you make, it also releases a chemical, a drug, a legal drug called dopamine in your system. And what that does is it triggers your brain and goes, ooh, I like that. Let's do that one again. Okay? And what that will do then is all of a sudden when you're faced with a decision, at first it's just going to be a minute second, you will decide or have the decision, okay, I can go with my natural tendency, or I could do this thing that last time made me feel good, made me feel better. And if you choose it, the more you choose it over and over and over again, the easier that path becomes and the old one starts to grow up again. The grass starts to grow over, and it's harder to go after. So the best way I can relate this to you, or my best non-scientific way to talk about this, is when I was growing up, my dad had a shop where he would work on cars, and he also had some machines, some mills and lathes in there, and he had his own business, okay? And every single morning, he would get up, he would walk out to his building. At lunch, he would come back in and eat lunch with all of us, and then he would go back out to his shop to work. And every single day, four times a day, he would walk in the exact same path. I don't know how he did it. He must have been a very good creature of habit. I would never form a path because I would never take the same place twice. But he formed this path where all the grass started to get worn down, and there was actually parts that the grass wasn't even growing. It turned into mud. And before you knew it, there was this designated path leading from the house to the shop. You knew where my dad was going to walk. And then do you know what that did for us? We started walking there because it was easiest. That's what happens to your brain. As you continue to decide not to make the same decisions over and over again, the pathway becomes a little bit more clear. It doesn't happen immediately, guys. But the more we make a decision, so let's use this example, okay? When we get upset, we eat, okay? Some natural ways that dopamine is let into your system is whenever you talk to someone you really enjoy talking to. When you exercise is a natural one. Whenever you feel like you're being successful, that's a natural way to release dopamine into your system. So maybe instead of going to the refrigerator, you make that conscious decision and say, no, today, instead of going to the refrigerator, I'm going to go grab my walking shoes and I'm going to take a walk around the block. And all of a sudden, whenever you decide to go take a walk around the block, you see that neighbor that you really enjoy, and all of a sudden, there's a little bit of dopamine let into your system, and then the next time that you get frustrated, all of a sudden, there's at least another option. My friends, have you thought about what you think about? Have you thought about the words? Have you guys ever thought about this? You are the one that talks to yourself the most. I talk to myself a lot more than probably most, okay? Funny. It's really good conversationalist, I feel. No. But my friends, what do you say to yourself? Church, what truths are you hearing from yourself every single day? The truth is, for most of us, most of our battles are won and lost in our mind. Before we ever get to a behavior, most of our battles are won and lost in our mind. What are you thinking about? Let's go to a little thought audit, okay? It's really easy, really simple. We have three categories on the board, okay? And I want you just individually think about this. The last week, maybe 2 weeks, if you were to have to put yourself on one side of the scale or the other, where would you fall? Let's talk about worried and peaceful thoughts. Have you been up worrying about how the kids are and what your finances look like? Is it hard to go to sleep at night? You got the tension headaches all the time? When people ask you how you are, you can't help but spew all the things that you're worried about. Or are you peaceful? Are you able to set aside your anxieties? Are you able to sleep at night? What about negative and positive thoughts? I'm so horrible. I'm so worthless. I can't believe I did that again. Ugh, what are you thinking? Are you positive? We'll get through this. I know this is hard, but I see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not an oncoming train. That was funny. Are you critical or gracious? Man, guys, this is hard for me. I know you guys think that I'm the most gracious person alive. But man, I can get critical. Why is she doing that? Why did they decide to do that? Why are they going there? How did they have enough money to do that when they didn't have enough money to do this? And are you serious here? Or are you gracious? Do you give the benefit of the doubt? Do you naturally believe the best in people? Where do you guys land? Thought audits are really, really enlightening. It's really enlightening because it helps you identify what you're thinking about on a regular basis. And my friends, as I said before, your life's going to go in the direction of your strongest thoughts. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what your job looks like, how much money you have, who your friends are, whether or not you still own Chuck Taylors and look good in them. It doesn't matter about any of that. Because if you can't have a positive life, you can never have a positive life if you have a negative mind. It's impossible. You might succeed for a little while. It might be a short-term fix. But if you want long-term positive life, you're never going to have it with a negative mind. And my friends, there's so many things that can feed into a negative mind. Criticism, self-doubt, frustration, mistrust. All of these things can affect the way that our mind works. And my friends, think about this. Some of you have been thinking the same things for many, many years. You think you're worthless. You think you were a mistake. You think that maybe you're better than everyone else, so everyone else is the mistake. You think you know more than others. You think there's nothing that you need to learn. And my friends, are you following me on this? It's no wonder we have so much trouble changing. Because we don't try to change the way that we think. I think that's why when God says to love him, he says, love the Lord your God with all your soul, mind, and strength. Guys, we don't just get off with going to church and speaking the truth. If we don't have a redeemed mind, if we don't have a transformed mind, if we don't have a, hear me on this, Nazareners, a sanctified mind, we don't have a sanctified life. So maybe for some of us, the reason why we're struggling, the reason why we have this kind of pessimistic view on change is because we have tried it, but we've started at the wrong place. We've tried it, but we've started with the behaviors and the friends and the things that we can measure, but we forget about the transformation of our thoughts. For some of us, Satan has us in a stronghold, but they're built on lies. They're built on these lies that might have some half-truths. But as long as he has us captured by the lies, he doesn't have to work very hard. Let me tell you a story. So when I was about, it's probably around 6, my little brother Dustin was around 4. And Dustin loved animals, so there were like 3 things that he really always wanted to play. We had these like fake horses that we would have to run all the way around the house and pretend that they were like migrating in the wild. Or we would have to play like Animal and Zookeeper. Or how many of you guys know what Snowy River is, the movie? No? No one? Okay, awesome. We had to play Jim Craig and Jessica, which were like the 2 main characters in the story, and Jim Craig was like this big horseman, okay? And so those were the 3 things, and on this particular day, I was trying to read a Boxcar Children book, and it was like I don't know if you guys have seen them, but they're actually the junior edition, so it was like just 1 chapter boxcar book rather than like a big chapter book. And I was really excited about it because my older brother was reading the actual one, so it made me feel all grown up. And I was reading these books, and Dustin kept coming in, and he was like, "Sis, will you play with me? Sis, will you play with me?" And finally, I got really, really frustrated, so I was like, "Okay, Dustin, yeah, I'll play with you. Let's go play Zookeeper." Okay? So I take him into the living room, and I was like, "Okay, buddy, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to be the zookeeper. You're going to be a lion. And the lion's job is to stay inside its cage." So I grabbed this laundry basket, a pretty big one, and I said, "Okay, Dustin, lay down," and I put the basket on top of him, and I go, "Okay, Dustin, you're going to be a good lion that stays in the cage. Now, if you leave the cage, then you're not playing the game right. So in order to play the game right, you have to stay in here until I come back and get you." And then I was like, "And I'm going to go do other zookeeper stuff, and then I'll be back later to make sure, you're fed for a pretend dinner." And he, "All right, this is awesome." And so he's growling and playing in his little cage. And I walked off and proceeded to go read a book. Had no intention of going back for him. About an hour later, I heard my mom, and she called me in to the living room. And she looks at me and she goes, "Dustin's bawling. He's bawling. He's convinced he can't get out of the cage until I let him out." And mom looks at me and she goes, "Shauna, what were you thinking?" And I was like, "Well, I wanted to go read and he wanted to play. This seemed like a good compromise." She was like, "Shauna, no." And I looked at Dustin and I said, "Dustin, why didn't you just get out of the cage?" "Because you told me I couldn't get out." Dustin was locked in a cage because of a lie. And for so many of us, we are locked in a cage believing lies. Because, my friends, the truth is, you can't do everything on your own. But the truth is, if you are a part of community, you're not alone. The truth is, you can't change anything on your own power. But the truth is that if we truly believe in a God who can raise someone from the dead, that same power is in us. And Satan, he's really good at feeding you the first part of those lies. He's really good at reminding you of the places where you failed, but he's really good at clouding your judgment when it comes to the truth. And my friends, that's why this is so important. We cannot be caught in the strongholds. And so how do we do this? Going back to that 2 Corinthians verse, how do we break these strongholds? We take these ideas and these thoughts that do not line up with who God says you are, and you call it out and you say, "This does not line up." And you make a choice to follow a different pathway. Church, as I said before, it's a really simple concept, but it's not easy. In fact, it can be exhausting. But I believe that's the reason why we need community. So that we can lock arms together, and when one is strong, the other can fall, and then we still haven't fallen to the ground because we're holding each other up. That's why this concept of church is so important. It's why youth group is so important, because you cannot do this by yourself. But the truth is, if we're doing church the way we're supposed to be church, we will not ever be alone. But more than that, we have a divine power that is working in us and through us. Your life will always go in the direction of your strongest thought. Where are your thoughts leading you? As we get ready to close this time, I have to tell you that this is a concept for me that is really hard. And the reason why is because I'm an intellectual. I'm not really a feeler, right? And so for me, I want a formula, right? Like, I want to be able to follow a formula, and then therefore everything will be fixed. I want to be able to measure it. I want to be able to say, nope, I did this checklist, and so I know that I'm being successful. That's where that critical versus gracious nature comes in. But my friends, I think, I really do believe this, that if we are hoping to have a different 2019 than 2018, I think we need to let go of the formulas. I think we need to let go of the five-step plans, not to say that they're not good, and please, if you have those, yeah, okay, keep with them, but don't make that the priority. Instead, what would it look like if throughout this week, each one of us intentionally did a thought audit on ourselves? What if accountability in small group or in our homes or with our spouses, accountability came from not letting us talk down about ourselves or making assumptions about other people? How would our Fairlawn, how would our church, how would our city, how would our workplaces, how would our schools change? And my friends, that is what is so spectacular about being a Christian. That is what is so spectacular about being able to rely a God who gives us divine power when we have wrapped ourselves so much in habits and bad choices that we don't know how to get out. This is not the end. One of my favorite things to remind people of is that God does save us from hell. But when he saves us, he also calls us to a better life than we've ever lived right now. And if we really believe that, then couldn't this possibly be doable? I'm going to do something that I don't normally do. I want you guys to close your eyes. I know some of you are going to be rebels and not, and that's fine. But I want you guys to intentionally think, where have my thoughts landed? What strongholds have me? And what truths do I need to call out? And I'm going to ask you guys to do something that I've never asked you to do. But if you guys, if you're looking to do a thought audit this week, if you're looking to try maybe for 2019 to just have a transformed mind, will you just really quietly raise your hand for me, please? Will you just really quietly, just in your heart, between me and you, make that commitment today? I see you. Thank you. See you. Thank you. I'll be praying for you guys. Let's pray together. Father, I am so thankful. I am so thankful that we have a God who is so concerned about making our life right here and now better, that you give us this opportunity to not stay the same. The ability and the power to change. God, I pray that you will help us as we go into this week, that we will be intentional about the thoughts and the habits that have formed the patterns in our life. That you will help us to identify those things that we do just all the time out of habit that might not actually have any truth in them. And God, I pray that you will help us to find someone to hold us accountable to having a transformed mind. We love you so much, Father, and we're so thankful for what you are doing in your life, and we are gratefully thanking you for what you are going to do in 2019. We love you so much. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, I'm going to ask you guys to go ahead and stand. We're going to close with a song called Your Grace is Enough. But I'm going to leave you with this real quick last verse in 2 Corinthians 12:19. This is written by Paul, the same guy that I've referenced throughout my sermon. But to give you a little bit of background, Paul has this one thing, this one habit, this one problem that he's never able to get over. And I am so glad that we don't know what that is. But he asked God over and over to just take it away. And this is what God says in response. He says, 3 times I asked God to take it away. And each time God replied, my grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. May you guys go into this week relying on the power of God and the nature of accountability. Thank you.